You ended up skiing, John?
Yeah, going back up tonight because it's supposed to cool down again for a couple of days, and I think Friday's going to be it because skied Monday and Tuesday, and it was pretty slushy. I mean.
Oh, you're doing slush, aren't you, basically, when you're...
Well, if you get up high enough, it's only half slush, you know, but, I mean, it got to be 55 in Park City, you know, so,
oh.
I mean, so every 1,000 feet, you'll lose about 3 degrees,
yeah.
So you're not anywhere near freezing even at the top anymore, but, yeah, it's skiable, and, you know, it's been really a long winter when you think about it. I mean,
I think I started...
I have to really look back, but I think I started earlier than I've ever started before because we had early snow.
Right.
And this will be the latest that I've ever skied here. I mean, usually, well, the temperature the other day, April 3rd, was like March 3rd of last year. So that very high temperature we had here a week ago, or,
yeah,
you know, 4 or 5 days ago, that was the March 1st temperature last year. So by March 15th last year, there was no snow left.
Yeah, it's a good month.
Exactly.
Good month behind this year as far as.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and that's what the farmers are saying too. They can't plant.
Right.
Because,
yeah,
you know, it's too wet and they're late.
Yeah.
So.
I went up to, I skied at Deer Valley April 1st and it was fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't believe it.
Oh, you have a lot of snow up there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost too much because I probably would have skied more days, except, you know, as you get older, it's harder to see. And it was either snowing and you couldn't see, or it was overcast and you couldn't see. So it was one of those kind of strange winters. Usually we get the snow. It's nice for a couple of days, snow.
Yeah.
This year it was
snow. First time in 20 years we've had too much snow.
Yes.
This might be our quorum of golf committee members, at least as I guess. Not coming or will be late. I'm not sure where Ken is. But
about what?
Courts away.
Courts holding court elsewhere.
Yep, Ron's not available, so.
Yeah, so that's great.
Well, let's vote everything in there.
Right.
Let's approve everything.
We'll do like Disney. You know.
Yeah. So, anyway, Masters was really good too then.
It was good. Well, the weather was really, really funny. Like I say, it was 92 degrees on Wednesday, 85 Thursday, but by Saturday, a high of 48. And Sunday, when they had to play a round and a half, the high was 60, but at least it was sunny. But it was still pretty cool.
Mm. Yeah. A lot of rain, right? Because, I mean, I saw umbrellas on TV all the time.
2 inches of rain in 24 hours, but they have a sub-air system underneath the entire golf course, so they can take 4 or 5 inches of rain in 24 hours, and it doesn't bother them. But all of the parking lots and everything were, like, floating.
Yeah.
Infrastructure around the course was impacted. And then, of course, you had a couple of fallen trees.
Well, yeah.
That was scary.
That was scary.
Yeah.
That was scary.
Yeah, it could have easily.
We heard a crackling. I was across the fairway. It was by 17 tee, and I was in the grandstands on 15 when that happened. All of a sudden, you heard this really high-pitched crackling like wood was breaking, and you're like, what in heaven's name is that? Because at the time, it wasn't even windy.
Oh.
And all of a sudden, people started yelling and running. The people over on 17T apparently, I guess, knew what was happening. Or
Godzilla is coming.
They ran, and fortunately, everybody got out of the way. It's a miracle that nobody was injured or killed.
Yeah.
Because the biggest tree that came down had about an 11-foot diameter root ball on it. I mean, it was a big tree. But those trees that came down were only planted 3 years ago. And, you know, the roots on those lodgepole pines go horizontal. They don't go down. And they just didn't plant them deep enough.
Huh.
You know, and then the lodgepole pine, when it is windy, it's like a flag. You know, it's going back and forth. And pretty soon it loosens the whole root system. And then, boom.
As wet as it was. And
Well, you know, the next day, you couldn't even tell there had been two big trees there. They had come
saw
in
it
the grounds crew. I mean, you know, Augusta National. I mean,
right.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like the mop-up crew comes in and you don't know anyone was ever murdered there. You know? Yeah, I mean, it was they've never had anything like that happen before. Even when the tornado went through a couple years ago, it didn't knock down any trees. it just a lot of limbs and a lot of leaves and stuff.
Yeah.
It was a mess, but full trees didn't come down.
5 years ago or so, when it went through here, and the twins came over to Bountiful Cemetery,
and
that's what happened. All the trees just uprooted.
Yeah.
You know, because they were also shallow-rooted trees. So. Well, that happened on the golf course, too, right?
Yeah, pine trees have pretty shallow root systems. Yeah. They go horizontal and not vertical.
Yeah.
So.
Well, is this going to be it? I guess we can start the meeting. And first item would be to approve the minutes from February 15th.
I move that we approve the minutes from February 15th.
And I second it.
All right. All those in favor?
Right.
Not that we can really remember back that far.
Right.
But I did read them
the other day. Yes.
It was interesting how several things in those minutes didn't actually happen.
Right.
But
not that you recall.
Anyway.
All right. So I guess the title for our revenue update for 2023.
It hasn't changed much since February, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Has a little bit. We've had about 300 rounds in March. We were open 2.5 days, and they were busy days. So you can see. We're just below historic, but we're still well behind last fiscal year and then the previous. If I kind of calculated where we would be at the end of the month of April and May and June, and if we have two good months, two and a half good months, we'll be about 65,000 rounds, which...
Which is really... Yeah.
With missing out on... We really missed out on 3,500 rounds in March, you know, another 2,000 rounds in April at least, and then quite a bit in November too, probably 1,500 to 2,000 rounds. So it's been a slow go. We are still up quite a bit in revenue. I still see us getting over 2 million with 2.5 months. June will be over 300,000, May will be pretty close to 300, and then the rest of April, it should be 150 to 180. And that's not including what we'll do in the event center and grill. So we'll hopefully start generating some money, the grill. And we do have quite a few events I'll show you scheduled for April, May, and June in the event center.
You haven't actually missed any major outings or things like that, have we yet?
No, we typically don't get any until June. And it's rare for us to have golf tournaments in April. Well, rare to have them in May, and even more rare to have some in April, at least since I've been here. So
But you do have two scheduled later this
season. We do have two, and then three in May as well. Looking back the previous year, we had one in May, and that was our first one last year, which was an even nicer year. So we've got 20 tournaments scheduled total, April, May, and June from today's date. And then we have 30 events. Actually, that's probably the whole month. I probably took all of April. So 30 events in the event center, not golf tournaments, but receptions, dinners, 30.
That's good.
How does that compare to last year?
Well, we had
30
zero.
More?
Yeah, quite a bit more.
Well, the event center is pretty nice. I was at a wedding there Thursday night, and the looks and... The way it's changed and the feel is really
good. It looks nicely renovated.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't notice that it's new, but, I mean, you just...
Had a good feeling.
It's not dumpy like it used to be, you know, and the floor especially is nice.
Yeah.
Is that actual real stone tile, or is that synthetic?
It's a LVT, so it's a luxury vinyl tile, so it's a vinyl plank.
Very hard to tell. I mean, the only way I could tell was why... I could tell the joints weren't grouted.
Yeah.
You know, so other than that, I mean, it was really, really nice. And
that's tremendous. What are you, in addition to the renovation, it's the people booking it, right?
Yeah. Okay. And we'll get to the deck, but I think having the deck done will even more set us apart from others. So, but, you know,
30 events.
Yeah. So if you figure we have between golf and events 50 days. There's a couple that overlap where we have a golf tournament in the morning and then an evening event. But 50 out of 90 days, 91 days, events is pretty good, I thought. So June will be a very heavy golf tournament month. You see And what I wanted to see and what we worked on in February, maybe January, our pricing, where we increased golf tournament pricing on the weekends to incorporate some more full-day weddings. You can kind of see we've got more tournaments in the weekdays. And what my weekends are Friday, Saturday, Sunday, so quite a few of these weekend. I should have put Fridays and Saturdays separate those even more, but a lot of weekend events and a lot of weekday golf tournaments is what I want.
That's a good combination.
What we can see. So we're going to maximize the revenue there. And the June Saturday tournaments are paying that $10,000 fee. And in several of them, we have evening rentals. So we're kind of double dipping on those in January, which is, or June, sorry, not January.
And then typically when spring finally does arrive, we'll say that it has now, don't you usually pick up a few more tournaments?
Yeah, we'll fill in quite a bit of, and
from the procrastinators.
Procrastinators, and a lot of them are returning ones that are slow to get to us.
Right.
We've picked up quite a few new ones, which I'm excited about.
How many total tournaments did you have last year?
You
told me once, but I forgot.
I want to say it was around 45.
That's what I was thinking, 44, 45.
I'll have to double check, but I'm pretty sure it's 40, around the mid-40s. You know, historically, 55 to 60 is probably a high, average high over the last 20 years. I'm not necessarily trying to get to that number. I'm just trying to maximize revenue on days. So if we, especially our public play, where we've been so busy Thursday, Friday, Saturdays, the golf tournaments have to pay that premium that we're losing. So as we kind of get people used to that and
so do
changing.
You're encouraging tournaments and outings to come Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, if
that's all
possible. But if they want to pay the piper, so to speak, they can. That's a great way to do it.
And we're filling in, it's like the golf tournaments the golf course is running, we're filling in on those Saturdays that we have weddings and events.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not losing out on anything golf tournament wise or trying to double book, having a golf tournament where we can't have an all-day wedding.
Right.
That want to use the event center. And construction, I was hoping Ken was here because him and I have talked about this a little bit. We'll get to that in construction, how we can maybe balance both of those and allow golf tournaments and weddings to go on at the same time. So, any questions on revenue? About $200,000 of that is merchandise. The rest of that is mostly green fees, cart fees, driving range. Driving range, we're about $60,000. And we can kind of go through this towards the end. This only goes through February, so it doesn't have, I think we had about $35,000 in March with some merchandise sales and a little bit of golf. Dynamic pricing, I know we've talked here and there months and getting a little bit more, I don't want to say the right word. I've done the back end work for us to try it, but I wanted to kind of present it to you guys and get some feedback from you on how we would do it. So it was a big, long scrolling. So I just took a top screenshot of how the program works. So on this left side, it says days in advance, and I've got five different sections. So days in advance means how far people will book tee time. Mm-hmm. So I've got 6 to 7 days, 5 to 6, or let's see, 6 to 7, 4 to 5, 2 to 3, and 0 to 1. So I kind of have those booking windows when they would book. Then I have segmented by tee times, so early morning, early afternoon, late afternoon, early evening, late evening. Kind of those time segments, and they're broken down by 2-hour increments. Then those 2-hour, and I know this is complicated, then those increments I have occupancy rates, so how full the tee sheet is. So if the tee sheet's wide open, and we're 7 days out, I want to encourage people to book those times by offering them a little bit of a discount.
So the farther in advance you book, you get a little better discount.
Yeah, but I only
closer to the time, like if you walk in, no discount.
Premium. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I kind of pick times that I know are a little less busy. So for example, really between when we open and 10 o'clock, we're busy. So I don't necessarily want to offer a discount even if they're booking 7 days out.
Mm-hmm.
But from 12 to 2, we're a little less busy. I'll offer them that discount to book 7 days out. In short, basically as we get closer to those booking days, the less discounts we offer and the premium they're paying if the times are booked heavily. So if we're 1 day out between 12 and 2 and I have 0 to 15% of those rounds taken, I'm not going to charge them a premium. I may even offer them a little bit of discount even though it's 1 to 2 days. But as it gets booked, the system will automatically update the pricing. So if I get, let's say, they're calling for weather and I'm not very busy and then they change the weather forecast and I start getting phone calls and bookings, as that goes from 0 to 90%, those 90 to 100% are paying that top dollar to get that tee time.
What's the program that you're using?
It's on Chrono Golf, so it's on the point of sale system that we use. They've had it the last 2 years, but they've made some improvements to it that allow for more variability.
The algorithms going a little bit more?
A little more automated. So I have to go in and adjust pricing.
Is anybody else using it in Utah at all?
Utah, not really. I had a phone call with he's not an inside sales rep, but that's kind of what I see him as. He kind of sells you on the products that Lightspeed uses, and he was actually... He's a PGA professional now working for them, and he ran this program, his golf course, previous 3 years. So him and I spent an hour walking through, well, how does this work, and ask questions, and he kind of told me if I were to ever go golf course again, I wouldn't do anything different. I wouldn't have a rack rate. I would have, I guess he'd have a rack rate, but it would be priced according to how busy the golf course
is. Yeah, well, pretty much every place that I go down in Phoenix or down in, down in Palm Springs, I mean, they're all like that. And you just look them up online, and, mm-hmm. I mean, you can see, and they vary significantly, but, I mean, they've been doing that for years, so that's what it is. You know?
I do think some of the St. George courses have started doing that in the wintertime.
Las Vegas courses.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Up here I haven't seen anybody started using them that I've noticed with.
Well, I'm sure if Eaglewood starts it, other people will do it.
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things that, you got to match supply and demand.
So when they go online to book, they'll be able to tell, hey, if I choose this time and this, this is what
it will show them that
the
rate.
Equivalent to.
Yeah.
Okay. So that we don't have anybody come in and say, I don't understand why I'm paying $50 an hour and this guy is paying $45 an hour.
Yeah, and that's my biggest concern is those that are walking in or
booked 3 days and I booked 7 days and
I don't want to, I can tell them why. Whether they understand it or not makes me
that's
a little
what
nervous.
I can tell you
what resorts do as far, they all utilize dynamic pricing, and I can tell you how they sell it. You put a positive spin on it by saying you're eligible for a discounted rate. See, you put the positive spin. You don't say, hey, if you're
charging more,
So put a positive spin on it and let them know that there are some discounts available. And, even golfers, especially in Utah, unfortunately, the word discount resonates.
Yeah.
So as long as you put that positive spin on it from a marketing perspective, otherwise dynamic pricing has a negative for a lot of people. But
they're not going to want to touch it with a 10-foot pole if it's,
And you're right, a lot of people are afraid of the term dynamic. But dynamic pricing, no, I was a victim of dynamic pricing,
It's the kind of words you don't use.
But
discounts are available if you come in.
Discounts are available by booking in advance, and all of a sudden, hey, Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did.
A very simple 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points that say, hey, so it's easy for them to understand.
And after a few weeks, your regulars will find out, they'll understand real quick, hey, if I want a discount, I'm going to book 7 days in advance. At this time, I get a discount.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I want to push those that are consistently booking that are locals to those cheaper times, because we're filling up those busy times with non-regulars, and they're willing to pay.
I always book between 12 and 2, not because of price, but because I don't want as many people on the golf course.
Yeah.
So the play is quicker.
You'll be rewarded.
Yeah. Most of the time I book around 12:30.
And
that's the way to look at it. You book 7 days in advance between 12 and 2, you'll be rewarded. Hey, here's a reward. You'll save enough money to have a free lunch.
Yeah.
There you go.
I do. So we've offered this afternoon special for quite a few years. I bumped it up from 20 to 25 and from 40 to 45 this year. I think that's probably the only section that I'd like to leave outside of dynamic pricing, at least for this year, where people are so ingrained with this afternoon special that I think we've got some traction with regular play. Not to say that we, halfway through the year we're too busy.
Yeah, you can.
We need to figure something else out. But and I've done some. I'll regularly look at the daily tee sheet and then offer discounts online for certain times that are less busy, and I'll probably continue to do that are more in line with these rates, rather than a 5 or 7.5% discount, more filling in the day of. So
the way it's structured now, you could get a maximum of a 10% discount.
7.5 is kind of the lowest that I went, just about $4. So it'd take them from 58 to 54. Part of what we're going to start doing too is upselling when they're booking, so offering a little bit of a discount on range tokens. We're looking at doing some lunch vouchers, those types of things, so people are, in a sense, prepaying for those.
Okay, let me see if I understand then. Okay, so let's do the 12 to 2.
Yes.
Can you have 7 day in advance and the 12 to 2 as being two discounts, or is it a combination?
Are you saying afternoon special?
Yeah.
So that was my one question to him. He said, I got to have one or the other. So if I have this discounted rate, I'd have to set that time period as a 0% discount. Because if I have some of these, then this will discount that even further.
Yeah. Because basically the rack rate is already discounted, so you can't discount it again.
Yeah. Well, and that's
a good question.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. Hey, I'm going to take an advantage, and I'm going to go at this time, and I'm going to go 7 days in advance, and you're going to pay me to go golf.
Yeah.
People will figure that out.
Yeah.
Well, one question then. So what's the net effect of it as far as what you've simulated? More revenue?
Yes. So there's much more increase in rates than discounted rates. So my objective is to about 5% is average. Increase in revenue. And that's based on, I think I did a 90% occupancy rate, which is probably a little higher than what we're at. We're about 85 to 88 on, especially weekends. I calculated Friday, Saturday, Sundays. Weekdays are probably a little less occupied, but we're filling it in.
Yeah. My guess, what's going to happen in the next 12 to 18 months is that one of two things, either people are going to spend less and travel less and spend more, like for golf and so forth, or we're going to see a little bit of a decrease in both places, depending on how bad inflation and so forth gets. But right now, inflation numbers came in looking not too bad, so it's probably more likely we're going to see more travel and more golf.
I had that discussion with a customer on last Saturday. because he was asking what our rates went up to, and I told him I went to 50, from 56 to 58, and he didn't really have a come apart, but he was just like, well, how come you guys are going up this much and this much? And I'm like, you know, inflation went up 8% last year, and we went up 4.
Yeah.
We should have raised our rates more.
Well, that's an answer. Just say, 12%. You know, the other thing is, in order to keep employees, I mean, you got to pay them at least what McDonald's pays. So, I mean, you know, probably we really don't, I guess, right, because of the perks they get. But, I mean, you know, every place you go, the prices are going up because the cost is going up.
Yeah.
Yes, so far the national trend is people are going back to work after the pandemic, and so now they have less time to play golf. It hasn't really kicked in this market because we've been in winter, so... But in, you know, like in the Southeast and things where they've been playing, where they've had their peak season now, people are playing less golf, and that coupled with the pandemic, going back to work, and then inflation, again, playing fewer rounds. So.
Yeah. Well, the one thing I noticed skiing, there were less people skiing this year. Mm-hmm. I'll see what the statistics say, but I can tell you the lift lines were never long, you know, and for all the good snow that we had and everything, and the fact that I ski in Park City and Cottonwood was closed so much.
Right.
You know, those people didn't come up to Park City. It was noticeably fewer skiers on the surface.
Right? Yeah. So it is trending down a little bit, but that's another good reason why you need to utilize dynamic pricing, because you really need to maximize your revenue during peak times.
Yeah.
Correct. And those that are going to pay are going to pay regardless. So.
Yeah.
Right. So, and as you pointed out, Tyler, the bottom line will be increased revenues because you're offering a discount at times where you might not get any players.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
If you put them in at a discount, that's actually going to help you. But your peak times, you're above your what would you call it, your norm.
Because we are, you know, frankly, we're turning away from people during peak times.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can push those that would be there to different times so we can fill up those at a higher rate, then all the better for us. I'll probably start this in May. Just kind of my projection. I want to make sure we'll probably do a test run end of April with it rolling out just to see how bookings are going and how it populates on the website, but
May's only 18 days away. Believe it or not, don't look now.
No, I've got it's all set up. I've got to duplicate it for weekdays, but all the back end work's done. So
good. I mean, well, I think that's
you. Do you need it? Do you need any kind of a formal?
I don't think so, because
to implement
the fee schedule says that I can adjust rates accordingly, depending on what I need. So I think that's my workaround. I think next time we do some rate increases, I'll probably formulate that a little bit more. Rather than having a rack rate, I'll probably just have a range of where our rates would be so that City Council can see that a little clearer. But
all right, well, it might be good. Obviously supporting it, maybe we should just make a motion and put it in the minutes that, you know, we support this so that it gets better utilization of the golf course.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. I'll make the motion that we support dynamic pricing and that we consider to work on. I think it gives you a lot more flexibility. And you can adjust faster to, if the market changes, you can adjust faster.
Rather than
losing a couple months of revenue, for example, if everybody else in the world suddenly goes up.
All right, do we have a second?
Nice second motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, unanimous.
And what's nice about this is I can go in and change those percentages daily if needed. So if we're starting to get, you know, if I start seeing from 12 to 2, those are my only tee times booked on a Saturday 3 days in advance, I might think, okay, we need to either step that down or broaden where we're getting.
Yeah, you can adjust really every day if you wanted to. So that's why it's so good. And as long as the software, you know, remains functional, that's the only problem. Then the software doesn't work, all of a sudden then you're...
I don't want it to charge someone $5.80 for a round.
Exactly.
but I'll probably maybe I'll give a short breakdown report-wise after the first week of trying it.
Okay.
Our May meeting.
See what the status, how it goes.
Yeah. I may have to wait till the end. No, I think I can run a report at the end of that week. The grill's open. These are kind of our hours that we're going to be planning on starting next Monday. Is weekdays, so Monday through Thursday, 8 to 7, and then weekends, 7 to 8. And then as we get into May and June and July, we'll go more, probably 7 to 9.
Will the grill be open when the first tee time is available?
Yes and no. We'll have some pre-made sandwiches, parfaits, overnight oats, coffee, those things available, probably especially in June on a weekday. We'll have stuff available for them to purchase.
Like June 21st, the longest day of the year, the sun rises at what, 6:12?
Yeah, pretty close to 6 our first tee times.
But the grill won't be open?
We're probably not. If we're busy, Thursday probably, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, where we're not so busy, probably have them. They'll actually have someone there probably prepping food. So we've talked about just having them, making sure we have some pre-sale.
I haven't been up there for a week. Is he going to do a breakfast menu?
Yeah, we have breakfast sandwiches, burritos, overnight oats, yogurt parfait.
What is an overnight oat?
It's like a...
It's muesli.
Right? Yeah.
And it's Swiss. And you prepare it the night before, and it goes back in the fridge, and the next morning puts milk on it.
It's different than just the instant oatmeal.
I do it actually 4 to 6 days in advance. So it's a half a banana, half a cup of fruit, third of a cup of oats, half a cup of like almond milk, some chia seeds, and some protein. You put a scoop of protein in there. So. Since I got some counseling about 2 years ago, that's almost all I ever eat for breakfast.
It sounds like a great
And I can change the fruit, and if it's in season, I use real fruit. Wintertime, you use frozen fruit, but...
Yeah, it's good. Shred an apple and put in it.
Yeah,
nuts, if you want that. Mm-hmm. Raisins, of course.
Oh, yeah.
The only reason I ask, I love to, if I've got a morning tea time early, I love to go to the golf course and have breakfast and then...
Yeah.
And hit balls and then play.
We're planning on doing some brunches and early, like more of event type stuff, especially on the weekends, that we'll invite. We even talked about doing, rather than doing a tea times for a morning, do a brunch and then kind of a shotgun for public play. So we'll start doing some more of that type stuff.
Okay.
But brunches might go well with the neighborhood too.
Yeah.
Has to get word of mouth out there or some advertising out there, but I mean, the neighborhood's been looking for that for a long time.
We're working on getting our banquet alcohol license so we can serve stuff other than, we can do mimosas and things like that for brunch rather than just beer and seltzers. So,
mimosa or Bloody Mary?
Yeah. And he's pretty in tune to the alcohol scene, so I'll trust him on that.
Yeah, it'd have to be if it came from Hidden Valley.
Yeah. Well, and he worked at the brewery, and he kind of did all their stuff, too. So.
Okay.
Still waiting on the deck. They came and tarped it off today in case we do get some weather tomorrow because it was starting to dry out. A couple weeks ago, we met with the guy doing the deck, and he said, basically, I don't have much going on. We've got one big job right now, but we can jump on this as soon as it's dried out. Yesterday they told me he can start on May 1st, so I wasn't too happy about that, so I've kind of pushed back, and I still haven't gotten a good answer, but I told him you got to be done by May 11th, no matter what, so May 10th, really, while I'm working on the day. So we're still planning on the open house. We walked the whole building today, and I was nitpicking on little tiny things they need to clean up and still do. Now that the snow's melted, they can pick up a little bit more of the trash that got buried. But it's looking pretty good. We've got pretty much everything. A few little electrical items inside we've got to adjust. Other than that, we're
Who is the subcontractor on the deck?
His name is Josh Danowski. He lives on hole number 14.
Why is he so slow? I mean, he's using weather as an excuse, but
yeah.
He should have had it done before the weather had
Yeah, that's what I've said as well. He's a subcontractor of a subcontractor, so
that's the problem.
It's
the fifth generation subcontractor.
So I was telling the Alco guy today, it's hard for you guys to hold his feet to the fire when he's not your subcontractor. You're trying to get your subcontractor to put his feet to the fire, and it's just not. It's not been
what
enjoyable.
What exactly does he still have to do?
Pretty much all of it. So they've got the metal laft down, which will help it not crack, and then so they got a waterproof. They've got to put down the flakes and then a couple clear coats on top of that. So about a week's worth of work, what they told me.
And he has to put all the railings up, right?
The railings are done. It's a
just can't be installed yet.
Yeah, because they want that
right.
Layer between the wood waterproofed, weatherproofed, sealed before they put the railing on.
Wow.
The railing guy said 1 to 2 days. So.
He just wasn't ready when this good weather hit for a couple of days, because that's too bad that he wasn't. I mean, he should have been in the starting blocks, and as soon as, you know, you get an 80-degree day, I mean, he should have been right.
Well, if you have to wait for it to dry out, it'll probably take more than a day or two.
Yeah, it's they have a meter up there, but it's close. It's dry to me, but they've got a little meter on there that they've been testing, and
yeah, well.
We'll see. So hopefully we see some progress in the middle of next week. By the time they say it gets dry, so
yeah.
I'll keep you. Well, you'll see, I guess. If the deck starts to go on with the railing, you'll know we're close. My hope is at the very least they waterproof it, get a layer on there, and then we can get the railings on at very minimum.
And so that's the last thing then.
Mm-hmm.
What were the major interior cleanup and punch list items that you noticed?
Flooring was probably the biggest. Some of their transition strips, broken tiles, touch up on paint. Those were probably the big ones. Audio system needed to be reconnected, which they worked on. They're still working on, but those aren't too integral to the operations. Inside speakers and those. Outside ones still aren't working, but they're supposed to come up this week and fix those too.
What caused the tile in some places to kind of, I noticed that when I was there more than a week ago at the tile.
I think just where the transitions are, they probably didn't float it very good on those corners.
Yeah.
When we got heavy equipment running over back and forth, it found a weak spot. So hopefully they can clean those out, but not too bad. Trying to think if there's anything else on the inside that was major. The doors, we've had a little bit of issues with just the caps on the ends and the doors swinging open in the wind, but minor stuff.
Have you had any problems with the lighting and those, you know, those chandeliers and light fixtures?
Mm-hmm.
They've been okay?
Yeah. We got dimmers put on those, so they seem to be working pretty good. Music system's been good in there. TVs have been pretty good.
What kind of warranty do we have or equivalent for all of the?
The contractor is going to be a year, starting when they get their final inspection stamp. Some of the subcontractors have longer, 2 to 5, even 10.
Okay.
You know, like the roof is 50 through that contractor. So there'll be some varying warranties on.
Yeah.
Materials, really. Not necessarily the work. One thing I'm working with Alco on is getting a extended warranty on the dry stack stone on the exterior. We've had pieces fall off already. So I want to make sure we're covered at least the next 8 to 10 years from Alco on them covering whatever cost it is to replace or repair, not the subcontractor, because who knows if they're around
three or
4 years from now. So I'm going to push for that before they get their final payment, because they know it's an issue too. So
yeah.
See what we can come up with.
Does he have any major problems in the grill? getting back to the grill.
We had a couple electrical.
Yeah.
He got his new pizza oven yesterday.
Yes. So we had pizza oven. Couple outlets were labeled dead wrong. We had a 110 for the oven that was a 220. We had to. It was a $1,200 repair, so that was fun.
Oh boy!
I mean, not only it was 220, and they had the wrong plug in there. Oh my god!
Yeah. So we're other with the last thing we have to hook up is the coffee maker, which it's a 220, but it's not a 20 amp. It's a 30 to 40 amp.
Oh boy.
So we may have to run new wire for the coffee maker. So, luckily the run's short.
Did anybody look there with the electrician who did it?
No, because they didn't know we were putting a coffee maker in there. We didn't know we were going to put one in there probably until a month ago. And what we did order, we probably should have looked at specs on what power we had. I just assumed that it was a standard outlet, plugging it in 110, like your all your other coffee makers, but this is a pretty heavy duty one. The electrician may say, yeah, you're okay on this 20 amp, and says 30 to 40, but really it's only going to pull 18 amps.
Depends on the gauge of the wire, but
yeah.
I mean, electrician would have to calculate that by the length of the wire. If it's not too long, that's good news, because short wire, you can probably get away with it.
Yeah. Worst case, it'll blow a breaker, and
we'll
have to replace it. But so they're coming this week to do that and then fix the garage door wiring. Alan and I went down to replace some lights downstairs in the garage, and they had the garage door opener hard jimmy rigged to the lights. So we are fixing that. So the electrician. Our electrician I've used outside of the construction is going to come run some conduit for that and get it wired correctly and up to code. So it's working right now, but
just a million little things.
Yeah. Luckily, no one ever got electrocuted because those wires were on top of metal, like the big fluorescent light, just kind of draped along the top.
Who did that? Contractor?
That would have been 2000. Too when they did the event center. So whatever that contractor was, which plenty of issues.
Wasn't recent.
No.
Lasted a long time without a problem.
Yeah.
It's amazing how forgiving electric is, and even it can be underwater sometimes, and it doesn't conduct any electricity. You know,
yeah.
So it's incredible how electric works.
It only takes one once for it to be a tragedy.
If you touch that in the ground, that's when you're in trouble.
Yeah. So yeah, we're cruising there. Should be done. It'd be nice to be wrapped up. And I have a few other wish list items. We'll have about $240,000 left over from the bond, which is pretty good. I've got parking lot, which would be a pretty good chunk. I would estimate probably $75,000 to $100,000 with the addition of drainage. I'm hoping I'm over. And maybe before we go, I'll pull up the maps. Looking at a pavilion on the northwest corner of the driving range for outside tournaments, to have them sit and eat out there rather than the event center. And kind of transitioning to a fee, or a discount for them to use that in a sense. But we've had a couple instances where tournaments have wanted to come days. We've had an all-day wedding. And if we can fit them in at that $10,000 price for a Saturday, then we're...
Yeah, that pavilion could be quite handy for that.
Yeah. I'll show you... Let me pull it up now while we're thinking about it. Let me pull up maps. I've gone ahead and got... I'm getting some bids on the cost for... the rock work and concrete. I'm hopeful it's in the $30,000 to $35,000 range at the most. So it would be about this area here, so I'm kind of outlining it. It's about, 2,800 square feet. I would do a pergola probably over this corner, just for cost, and then leave this open, and then kind of a walkway from this curb kind of onto this concrete patio area. We've even looked at just doing some umbrellas and patio furniture for time being, until we really want to spend money on.
And would you do like some big picnic tables or something?
Yeah, what I'm looking at doing.
That would protect the whole line from getting hit a little bit too, won't it?
Yeah.
I hope.
Some 6x6, true 6x6 timbers with kind of this overlapping joinery. And then, let me see if I can find a better picture. Kind of staining it the same color as the big timbers on the building. It would be, I'm thinking of doing 15-foot sections. So that, this area, you'd have 1, 2, 3 poles kind of down the middle, and then obviously around the exterior. Pavilions are really expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, cheaply, we are $75,000 to cover this, cheaply.
Yeah.
And you can get up to $125,000, $150,000 from what contractors have told me. So if we did something like this, we're in the $15,000 to $20,000 range, so significantly lower. I'm not really looking for this to be a weather from the storm area. Just a little bit of shade, people can eat outside type space. So if it's raining outside, there's not going to be anybody out playing golf anyways. So there's no, and where we have the covered deck up here, if there really anyone wants to eat outside in the rain, they can cover it under there. So.
But if you have to, the nice thing about those pergolas is you can throw a giant tarp over the top of it too.
Yeah, and they have some. They have some waterproof shades and some really nice. Let's see if I can find it. Picture, but if you did the, so they have kind of, they call them the wave shades, so you can kind of interweave them in between those vertical slats. So there's options there we can.
That would be a cool thing on a nice summer evening too.
Yeah, it is. I mean, there's a few restaurants down in Salt Lake City that have that type of thing outside.
Yeah.
What kind of flooring are you thinking about? Grass or?
Concrete.
Concrete?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've talked about doing some designs in it, but I think I'd probably just have it concrete with some saw cuts in them just for ground movement.
Color it pink or something.
Yeah. they'd have to do a rock wall from about here all the way up over to about right here.
Oh yeah, that area.
We measure about 4.5 feet. We're gonna try to stay under that 4 feet for engineering, just so we don't have to extra $2,000 to have it engineered. So that's a wish list item.
Would it make any sense to just drop that down a little bit so you don't have to do the wall or so much wall?
We could. I told them I wanted to keep it the same. Height is the range, which gives us not too much. It really peaks out
right
here,
mm-hmm.
and it was about 4.5 feet. So I told them whatever we need, and that's kind of why I wanted to keep this pergola, 30 by 45, kind of in this area.
Can we?
So we can squish it in if we're.
Could
if
we put some trees along that west side?
Here.
For a little bit of shading too. So that, especially if it's an evening activity.
Yeah, the nice thing about these, let me show you, they have the same thing they have on the top, you can do on the sides.
Ah, okay.
So we
that
could
would
kind
work.
Of roll down.
Yeah, we could do some roll
just,
down shades
yeah.
on that far side to kind of block some of the sun.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, that would work.
So that parking lot and finishing a few tee boxes are probably our first top three wish list items.
What's your estimate on the parking lot resurface?
Probably 75, is what I'm hoping. This whole section, probably all along the pro shop, needs to be repaved. There's a small section over here that's pretty crumbled, and then this section right here. What we're looking at is really putting drainage. Right now it has zero drainage, so the water just collects right here, and that's why all the spider cracking is. Everything from up here flows this way, down here in front of this gutter, down, collects right here, and then it overflows over into this section, and there's a small little drain kind of by this tree that goes down and ends up about right there. So that's it. So we're looking at adding, I'm working with Karen with engineering on adding some street drains, heavy duty street drains, that then dissipate into these trees, the flower bed areas. So we're looking at probably 2, maybe 3, just to get the water collection from here settling. I'm hopeful that we don't, you know, if you got, some of you maybe remember 2010, might have been even earlier, 2008, they redid this whole thing with GeoGrid fabric, dug that down, and it cost about $200,000 then. I'm hoping we don't have to repair that. That's my only concern.
Yeah.
Because once we dig this up and we find that there are soft spots and we've got to redo it, then we're, my wish list item gets really short. And may not even cover what it needs, which I don't really want to go to the council
How
asking
many
for more of.
Do you have in the
I have counted, and I don't remember off the top of my head. Well, we got 2, 4, 6.
I was wondering that the other day when there was an overflow.
There's probably 100, just guessing, without counting them all, 130 up top, and I think about 80 down below. Pretty close to 200 total. Which we will fill up, you know, like this day.
Yeah, whenever you have a 144 player tournament, it seems like there's both the upper and lower parking lots are full, and people are overflowing parking out of
I think having better signage down here for overflow parking might help us fill this up more. Because people will park here and then along the street, and then this is empty. So this has been repaved, restriped already. This probably resurfacing won't happen until later this fall. So I might stripe this in the next few weeks just to help it look a little nicer. Right now it's the lines are faded and not looking too great.
Yeah, the construction vehicles took a little bit of a toll there.
Yeah, they kind of destroyed wherever it was.
Does the city have the ability to fill the chuck holes and things in the park?
Yeah, so there's 2 pretty good sized holes. I'm going to have them fill this one, that one, and then there's a couple on the golf course that need some patching right now, too. Down on mostly water runoff.
Yeah,
12, down by 12 green. It's right on the edge where the water runs, right there, and then
and
right here on 12.
Between 13, I see 12 and 13.
Yeah.
Another one that has a fair hole.
Yeah, so we'll patch a few of those. Update on the pond that's out for engineering final design, and then it will go out for bid probably June, July. So it's changed a little bit, but this section will kind of start here, come out pretty close to these trees, wrap about right here, and then kind of just clip the side of the bunkers and then around. We're going to take those 2 bunkers out and just make a grass bunker area in front of the green.
That's number 8, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We're going to level this out a little bit more so it's not so steep.
Why don't you want those bunkers there?
The water's going to come up to about right here on both of them.
That's part of the flood control, right?
So they wanted to bring storm drain into the pond. So they're going to bring it off the road, storm drain. I think they're actually going to go on this side, through the cart path, and then down into the pond. It might be coming over to here and then in. It was a shorter run for them, which was huge cost savings, and then with all the secondary users adding onto the pond, lots of benefits there, but keeping the water up on the hill rather than just letting it go down. So there's not, I don't know our cost for the golf course side. We're basically paying for some aesthetics because we don't, this technically isn't our pond. We just use the water that's in it.
Whose pond is it?
The city's, the water departments. Because they're doing all of the homes up here, secondary water out of this pond. So we're only paying for what we pump out of our pump house. So.
How much expansion of how many thousand gallons of water?
I don't know the volume.
Maintain when they do that.
It's going down 5 feet from the, you know, what level this is at now on this edge.
But they're adding an extra arm around the
It's a considerable amount of water.
It changes the integrity of that golf hole, I think, quite a bit.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough golf hole. I mean, most good golfers don't have a problem hitting it into this space. I hope it's an appeal for people too to hit kind of a water green. You know, it's not entirely an island green, but it'll appear like it is from the.
Yeah, I think that's like it
is.
So. Yeah.
It'll make it go from a pretty easy par 3 to, I think, a harder par 3.
So who mandated that be done?
Well, it was kind of Weston and I's original idea because they wanted to pull storm drain from here and cut all the way across over into here. We've talked, him and I have talked about increasing this pond size for a couple of years.
Well, also, you know, right, the water runs down 18 and washes out that sand trap, and also there's no place for that water to go. So they want to divert it and keep it, basically, from going downhill.
Yeah, yeah, it was engineering and water's request to put more water into the pond. But if we don't have any more volume, to, you know, if we're always filling
so
that up.
So how much storage capacity will that increase?
I'll have to ask Karen. I don't know the water volume.
Is there any reason they can't make the pond twice as deep?
Only reason is that our intakes are at a certain level. Like, I think ours is at 6-7 feet. Once you get past where your intake, you know, you can get down 100 feet, but you only have a certain amount of volume above your intakes. I think theirs are even lower for this pump house. But anyways, I'll have more of an update on that probably midsummer. Let's go to your spreadsheets. So just as you're looking through, we have different, on the bottom of page 1 on the left, there's all those numbers. They're general ledger numbers that indicate what category that is. Anything 5-5, 5-5, 8-4 is the clubhouse, so pro shop. 5-5, 5-5, 8-5 is maintenance, and then so forth. So grill is 8-6, event center is 8-7. So those are, they're kind of four different departments within the golf course right now.
That's good. I like that.
So we'll do, we'll keep those separated. There are a lot of things that I've purchased for the event center or the grill before we had these ledger accounts set up that are in the clubhouse operations, and you can probably guess where they're at, but I'll point them out. The top three, really the top two sections are revenue. And if you probably want to, there's some past years on there, but one you want to look at for this one is if you look at the top up here, oops, it's the 2022-23 current year actual. So that's through That's expenses through March and revenues through February. So the top two lines have our revenue through February for the golf course. And then the one column right to the right of that is what kind of we projected we would make or spend as you're going through. So, let's see where to start. So you look at the very top, green fees, driving range, tournament fees, punch passes. As of February 28th, $629,000. Golf course rentals, which includes our merchandise, our golf carts, banquet center, the cafe, which is pretty low, $613,000. You get some of the non-operating expenses. The $284,000 is the biggest one. That's our trade-ins on golf carts. So that's basically what you could count it as revenue, and I'll show you at the end. That's the revenue we got from the trade-ins on the golf carts. So
what was the total revenue on trade-in?
$284,000, which was pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very good.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of why I pushed for that to go through when we did. And you'll see the purchase of the golf carts later, so those kind of offset. Golf course operating, we're pretty well under budget on everything. Cost of sales, it's not updated, but we did a budget adjustment for that. That one's I'm less concerned about, because as we're selling, we have to spend money to mm-hmm. get more merchandise. We're definitely overstocked right now. I think if we'd been open in November and March, I'd be less overstocked. But I think this will push us through. What I have now, what I have coming up until June 30th, will let me spend less money first of next year. So that's my hope, is I'll spend more now but less then, so it kind of will balance out with revenue. We're still projecting about $300,000 in revenue, so we'll spend this fiscal year anyways $186,000, but we'll make $300,000. But that's a little bit misleading, because we'll still probably have $100,000-$120,000 in inventory. At the end of the fiscal year, even though we've sold 300, we'll have $120,000 in inventory. So it's not necessarily apples to apples when you're looking at cost of sales and pro shop revenue. Employees, regular employees, there's still the three, Brent, myself, and Alan on the golf course side. Temporary employees, that one's a little bit inflated because I was paying for the event center staff all last fiscal year, and then let's see, bank charges, we'll probably, with only 2.5 months left, that'll probably be pretty close. There's nothing really glaring on there unless you get down to operating supplies. That's where I purchased some of the kitchen and event center materials on the golf course side, so that's why we're over there. So,
is he completely ready to go with the restaurant grill?
Yeah, we're running now. So we're.
Will he be fully operational then?
Yeah. We finally got the last couple cooks I think we needed hired. They're starting next week. So we'll have at least staffing for those times.
He did find some people, huh?
Yeah.
It wasn't easy, was it?
No, we were concerned. We had, we're paying them pretty well to be there seasonally, so.
Where did the other ones come from?
One of them came from him with Hidden Valley. One was worked at Bruges Waffle place. One girl's right out of culinary school, Park City Culinary Institute. She's doing mostly all the pastries and cookies, and she'll be doing some of the breads and more of kind of a prep cook.
We're doing pastries at the grill.
Did you try a croissant today?
Did I what?
Did you try a croissant?
No, I haven't tried one. We did the hamburgers yesterday.
I'll be there first thing tomorrow.
Yeah, come grab a croissant. The chocolate one if you can. Croissants are good. Chocolate chip cookies are really good. So we'll have a few of the novelty stuff.
Yeah.
But he's happy with it. we got.
Yeah, yeah. I think we'll be, we got plenty of beverage cart girls. The snack shack will probably get rolling out probably May pretty consistently. We're working on getting a sink out there and a hot dog. We've got the hot dog roller. We're going to put that out the snack shack and do some generic hot dogs with drinks and pre-made sandwiches out there. Weston's done a good job. He does a really good job staying under budget. You know, he's budgeted 773 and he's at 485 right now, with majority of that being operating supplies left and wages for full-time and temporary employees. So we should be good on his. The cafe, we're just looking to sell some stuff. So right now we're, like I said, it doesn't have any what we've made in March. We made a little bit of money. We had a couple $1,000 days in the cafe. We should have more and more of those. And as we get some of the golf tournament food and banquet food, that will go up too.
Mm-hmm. Have most of the tournaments been buying an F&B package?
We just started kind of selling that last week and a half ago, once we kind of got a menu and pricing set up. We sent it to everybody that's booked. We've got a few tentative. We've got some forms and contracts for them to sign and fill out. So we should, I mean, all the new tournaments we're going to make use ours or pay a fee. All the ones that had booked before, we kind of had set up, we're allowing them to bring in their own stuff if they've already had accommodations. It's probably, I'd have to ask Brent, probably 35, 40 that booked before we got stuff going.
But there's a chance of a lot of those, I mean, if you get 50% of those.
Yeah, and I think we're pretty competitive.
Once they see what's available.
Yeah. We're going to do a little tournament tasting day and invite those that are in charge of the tournaments to come up and try some of the food. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we can get them to, you know, you may think this is a lot, but this is going to be a lot better than a Costco pizza or whatever. So
maybe just be sure to invite them to the open house and kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, it's a good idea, too.
Yeah,
we're going to do little samples of more of our lunch menu stuff, but a lot of it will overlap on banquet.
Because
so.
When people see the new restaurant and grill and the new menu, I think they'll be enthusiastic about doing it. But like you say, when Brent booked a lot of those events, you didn't know for sure. You didn't have a menu set. You didn't have any hired.
Yeah, so. Yeah. We didn't want to tell them we didn't have any food,
hard to put the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing that might be worthwhile too in the beginning here with the cafe is, you know, Costco is great at the way they hand the little samples out, and if they had samples there, you know, people taste them when they check in or something, the number of people who come to eat lunch or something afterwards would probably increase quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, once people know there's food there, it tastes good, and have some idea what it is.
Yeah. Well, we're finding that those that are coming are surprised that the grill's open, since it was closed all year last year. So, hopefully we'll get some traction in there.
Yeah.
Not too much else. I mean, you go down to the golf course cafe operations, again, operating supplies. A lot of these are just one-time purchases or once in every 5-6 years, you know, with pots and pans and cooking utensils. So it's going to be a lot higher this year than I would like, but we'll be right there. And then we've added the event center just so I can track that a little more with expenses. The revenues are still the second section with the rents and leases, but just so I can track how much money we're spending on the event center. So. And then the last page is mostly our capital improvement with the construction. So the clubhouse, contractor, turf center, irrigation, those are all included in there. So our budgeted expenditure is 3.61, but that includes the $1.8 million in construction. So I like to look at it as those taken out, and depreciation. So I think we'll make some money again this year. It's going to be pretty close with the loss of 2 months of golf, but we're going to make a pretty good effort there to get there. Machinery and equipment on that kind of lower section, that's where the golf carts were. The 400 and I think 425,000 for the golf carts minus what you saw earlier on the returns, so the trade-in values.
Well, pretty good deal.
We have about, yeah, so we ended up paying 240,000 for,
they,
you know, 84 carts.
Installed all the GPS systems now?
I was told 2 weeks ago, about a week and a half ago. So
there's no going on.
They did come and install all the tracking parts on about a week and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the gentleman that came and did that is supposed to be coming to install the new ones, and he said, I'm scheduled, and my flight is end of the month, so which is another couple weeks.
Do you have any more people you're expected to join? Because I'm just going to lock the doors.
Nope, we're good.
You'll still be able to get out.
Thanks, Sherry. Yeah, so the reason...
Have they made good on the wheel covers and those little things?
Yeah, like they finally came and swapped out the right wheels last week. I'm frequently having to remind them that they're missing stuff. You know, like the, I had to remind them when they came and installed the wheels that we're still waiting on the second display holders that should go on the back of the carts. He said, well, we'll go find those, and he told me he just ordered them. So, still waiting on the last four carts that were probably never ordered. Just little things that I think they, I was talking with Brent and Allen, I'm not sure they made any money on this. They probably lost money on our purchase, which it's not my fault, but they're having to go back and look at the contract that we signed, and, oh, you're right, those are on there. Oh, you were supposed to put
that's,
those.
That's their own fault.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They shouldn't be that close.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, they're right in line with the mainstream anymore. I mean, everybody you deal with is like that. And they, at first, they have to, some difficulty getting some of the stuff. And then none of them have a system for keeping control over what the back orders are, and it's...
Yeah, they're just not tracking it properly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's a challenging market right now as far as the supply chain.
Yeah. I did with Vantage, the GPS unit system, they could have come out end of March and installed the 12-inch screens, but they had new screens that are smaller but supposed to be nicer coming out this month, that they offered to wait and just install the new ones. I said, well, let's just wait and do the
might
ones.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might as well.
They wanted to put those on, because they said they could do half the fleet with the old ones, just because I don't think they had enough of them. And I said, I don't, you know, that's all good and dandy till I got all 80 carts out and 40 carts are complaining they don't have GPS units
on.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I'd rather not have any. That's
yeah, it's
why
better
I
to be consistent one way or the other.
Yeah,
yeah.
But
and have them all the same.
But it's best to have it on all of them.
Yes.
Yeah.
So.
And all the same.
And all the same.
Oh, Pat Parenti's his name. I'll follow up with him this week and make sure we're on the schedule, that they've got the things they need. I've threatened a couple times that I'm going to start looking for other GPS unit companies, and they're. At that point, they're quick to respond to me.
Well, yeah,
but,
you have to,
you know,
after a while,
are they giving me truthful answers, or are they just kind of pushing me down the line?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah.
I wish Highland, they're the ones that recommended them, I wish they would push them a little bit more than they have. But we're almost to the end. And hopefully it's...
And you survived
there.
So far.
Finish line is, finish line is inside.
Yeah.
You know, last few days, I...
Oh, there's a big flood running across there.
Yeah.
There's some barriers to the finish line.
Right.
can you just give us a quick summary of how the simulators are done?
Yeah, we sold about 26 memberships over the winter. I've had about five extend for the year once they're 6 months. And then you know, on top of that, probably had 3 or 4 already booked for a year. So we have 10 members continuing through this summer, which I'm a little bit surprised with, honestly, that now that golf is open, they wanted to do it 10. But there probably are better tenants down there that have really enjoyed it. Karen, I think, used it a little bit here and there.
Yep. But you have plenty of room for more during the winter, right?
Yeah, we're going to do quite a bit more. We're going to do more league action. I think we're going to do more daily fee opportunities for people.
Yeah, I had a couple of people ask on daily fees, and I just told them to call because I had no idea.
Part of it was Alan and Brent had comp time to burn through, and I didn't want to pay for an employee. Well, two things.
Yeah.
One, all of my employees were seasonal, so they had to be terminated at the end of the season. I really need part-time employees that can work 15 to 30 hours a week the whole year, and I'm kind of working with HR in the city to be able to do that with a couple of employees that I have or want to hire.
That'd be great.
So I've got some, this is my lower wish list item of kind of expanding that and making it more of a center rather than just a couple simulators on the back end underneath the event center. So the I'm not sure how long the Giles insurance, Bullthorpe insurance, will be up there. Their lease has expired a few years ago. So I think we're going to seriously look at how their tenancy works down there and what opportunities we have for the golf course use. So
are they being used for lessons?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Alan's taught a ton. Brent's taught a few, and then Braden taught some here and there throughout the winter. Mm-hmm. But Alan did a lot.
How do you build that out when your guys give lessons there? Do they have to pay any kind of...
I'm not charging them anything because I thought it was a benefit to the golf course and hopefully getting them simulator memberships purchased through lessons, which didn't really happen this year, but...
So they're getting paid for the lessons.
Yeah.
Basically free.
They get to keep 100% of the revenue they make on the lessons then?
Yeah.
So are they on the city time clock when they give the lessons?
No, they're off the clock.
They're off the clock. Okay.
All lessons, yeah.
All right. And there are so many municipalities do it different ways.
Mm-hmm.
There's 100 different ways you can do it. That's really a good thing for them.
Yeah.
And it's good incentive for them to give some lessons. And it's hard to quantify the return on investment on those, but there is a positive return.
Yeah.
I mean, there have been a lot of studies done, and, there is a positive return. So.
Well, I don't know the percentage, but there's people that take lessons at your golf course are way more likely to come play golf at your golf course than elsewhere, even if it's inconvenient. So, I think there's a lot of the juniors that he's taught have joined his junior association in the spring. A lot of them have joined our junior club. Hopefully they'll buy clubs from us, and we're going to do some promotions for some junior sets. And
what did they charge an hour for a lesson on the simulator?
I think Alan's at 50 and Brent was 60. The nice thing about those simulators is both of them are indoor-outdoor, so we're looking at how we would, now that we have some year-long memberships, how we might be able to use those TrackMans outside for some premium lessons or fittings.
Yeah.
So we may, if we have a pick a day or lesson fitting times, we'll just block out that time on that rental simulator bay and take
and
it out.
Have the handful of demo days that you've done with the manufacturers resulted in some good equipment sales? I mean, you've had some good...
Yeah, we've outdoor ones have been really successful. We did a couple in the simulators that weren't too great. We had a couple clubs ordered.
But during the winter, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
those didn't reap a lot of benefits.
No. TaylorMade dropped the ball a little bit on there.
How so? What did they do?
The rep was out of town and he didn't notify his rep that was supposed to be fitting, so they canceled morning of. And
That's an old boy, no?
Yeah, they did one other one that wasn't very good, but the we got a couple fiber cells out of that one. So, Callaway's next week, so hopefully we have a nice day outside. That'll be a good.
That's scheduled to be outside.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as we have good weather, we can move it downstairs if we need to. But
the paradigm.
The paradigm. Yep. So.
Well, that's good. Those. Some courses really do well with their club fittings in the winter.
Yeah.
And that's when they're a lot of private clubs primarily, you know, and that's when people buy their equipment.
Yeah.
And that's when they order their equipment for the spring. It can be really, you know, really prosperous for the club, but you know, it has to catch on first.
Yeah.
And there are still a lot of people that I talk to that don't realize there are two simulators there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think as we get more leagues going and training on, we have two really, you know, we have a full Callaway fitting cart and pretty much a full Ping fitting cart on those two. We don't have TaylorMade or any others, but yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Well, as the simulators drop off a little bit too, you can have a simulator open house day on a Saturday or something and let people be on a simulator for 15 minutes or half an hour and
yeah.
No charge and just make everybody would then be aware that they're there.
Yeah, I think I'd like to do that, especially on busy days that were full, offer that to, hey, we courses.
I'd like to go play Pebble Beach or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it's a good alternative.
And we'll probably open some booking times and windows for those and promote them a little bit, even during the summer. Because I, you know, 100 degrees outside, I'd rather go hit the simulator than I would on driving range.
Plus, it doesn't take 5 hours.
Yeah, you can play in an
hour.
Generally speaking. Yeah. Yes, exactly. Maybe that'll help with our pace of play. I do, we're going to try something started this year. I'm doing a 9-minute intervals for the first hour and a half of the day, and then we're moving to 10-minute intervals throughout the rest of the day. We lose about tee time and a half a day. But it still leaves us the opportunity to what we call squeeze tee times in there so we can add groups as needed. But I'm hoping that we can control our pace of play.
Do you include a starters to starters time now during the day? Mm-mm. No starters times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to go 9 for first hour and a half and then 10. And we are doing more staffing. So we've hired our marshals. They're no longer volunteers, they're actual employees, and they're going to be calling them on-course attendants. So they'll be marshaling the course, but they'll also be doing some divot repair and things like that on the course to help out. So they'll have GPS units as long as we get them on the cart, so it'll show them where the slope play is and less driving around the whole course and more targeted.
Yeah,
interactions.
That'll help a lot.
That's the nice thing about those GPS units. You can identify where your bottlenecks are. And,
yeah.
You know, like if there's a convention on 8T, which there frequently is.
Yeah. So, and then that's my number one concern the last year and a half has been pace of play. There's been some negative, not necessarily reviews, but occasionally some negative comments on how long it's taken to play, which for me, it's like, you know, I can only do so much to get people to move.
Right.
Yeah.
Our golf course isn't a four-hour round. People think it is. I think it's closer to 4 hours and 30 minutes by the time you're around
it's
the course.
Too spread out to be
Yeah, especially if there's walkers in there. But I noticed that some of the slowest play are the younger kids. You know, they have to hit six tee shots and until they get a good one, you know. You would think it's women or older people, but it tends to be much more the
you
really young ones.
Slow play usually to skill level,
mm-hmm.
you know, most frequently. Sometimes it's not, but most frequently.
We're going to do, I'm hopeful with all the GPS units on giving us a point of contact to educate people. When you're on the first tee, your 9-hole round should take 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
You're on the clock. And as they're going, it'll tell them, hey, you're four minutes behind, you're 12 minutes behind, you're 18 minutes behind. And
You know, and, you know, not to beat the dead horse, but, you know, a lot of clubs now, especially private clubs, offer and resorts offer incentives. You know, you have par on the golf course, but now you have a time par also. If you complete the front nine in 2 hours and 15 minutes, we're going to give you a free beverage. If you don't make it, we're going to get mad at you. we're going to give you a little guilt trip, and we're going to let you know that you're over par and you need to step it up, and we'll do it diplomatically the first time or two, but after that, not so diplomatically.
Yeah. Well, a good marshal is what counts, because the trouble with being behind is once somebody slows up, everybody's going to be slow.
It's all day.
Yeah, it's a domino effect.
Yeah, I mean, so...
And it kills you. Yeah, if you have slow play in the morning, by mid-afternoon, you're dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was our issue. We had one group out in the morning that was 5 hours, we were having a hard time getting under five. I mean, it was five all day.
Yeah.
And once they get past hole 11, it's a, well, we hope they're playing fast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not necessarily the marshal's fault, because they'll go out there and they see people or see gaps, but they don't necessarily know if, was there a gap between tee times, or are they just slow, or what time did they start? We didn't give them much. We didn't give them the right tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, didn't give them the information
to be able to calculate and figure out. So we're going to have, I'm going to have an iPad on the cart with tee times, and then we're going to have cart numbers on there. So as they're looking at the GPS unit and the iPad, they'll be able to see, okay, this is the Johnson group, because they've got cart number 9. They started at 12:10, and it's 3:40, and they're on hole number 11. We've got an issue. So, anyways, we'll hopefully give them the right tools to figure it out. And us in the pro shop, really, to be able to see where everyone's at, because we'll be able to monitor, you know,
I think
go this way.
You can have speakers so you can actually talk to them?
We have walkie-talkies, yeah.
Okay.
I'm hoping that they'll work. I don't know.
That is a key.
I haven't bought any yet, because I don't know enough about them to be like, oh, this will work down on 14.
Well, or you can use people's cell phones.
Yeah.
Yeah. That might be your...
I'll lend you a couple of cheap ones. They work pretty well. They work pretty well even in the mountains, you know. So, where the cell phone sometimes doesn't. But I pair it in Park City. That probably cost me $30.
Oh, really?
You know, and they work fine. You know?
Okay. I know Public Works has a bunch that I may borrow too, and just see. The Grills asked for some too, between them and the beverage cart gals and the snack shack.
Just, yeah, that's a good idea.
Just so it's all.
And you can buy like 6 or 12, you know, the determined officials use. Get those and recharge them every night. They'll give you like, you can buy 12, and when you buy 12, the price point per unit is really low.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, the UGA and the PGA section all use those. And long as they remember to charge them, they work.
Right. They're probably going to try to control the number of carts a group uses this year.
Yeah, you know, I saw the ranches just put out their big notice to everybody that they're not allowing any more than 2 carts per group unless you pay for an extra cart. We did that a little bit, depending on, you know, if they had a group of 4 and they wanted to take an extra cart, we were charging them for it,
mm-hmm.
for the rider.
Well, a lot of times, though, I see 4 guys out there with 4 carts.
Oh, yeah.
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 Well, and
that's got to be four cart fees there, if they do that.
Yeah, I mean, it's your wear and tear in your cart and everything that
you're
not getting paid for.
Yeah. We're going to do a lot more of the assigning numbers to carts.
That's what I was going to,
so
take
cart number
10
or 12, or then we're going to
mark
it.
That way you know who's ruining your cart.
Well, one of the easiest things I've seen is, you know, when you pay the fee, they give you the cart key. And
but if they're paying online, well, they still have to check in.
To check in, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that way there you can only use the cart that they just gave you, you know.
Yeah,
we've toyed with that. I bought a nice starter's podium. We've toyed with the idea of having them get keys from them out near the carts.
Mm-hmm.
We've had a lot of different ideas, nothing concrete right now. We handed out keys today, but that was mostly because of the girls' golf.
Yeah, I mean, at the time they check in, that's the easiest place to do it, you know. And I mean, I've been places now where you have to sign liability releases.
Yeah.
And this was in Ohio at a state park, you know.
I don't know the legality of it, but I planned on putting on number 1T and number 10 a little disclaimer on there that says, by operating this golf cart, you're accepting all risk and responsibility to pay for damages caused to the golf cart or the golf course type deal. I don't, you know how much we can enforce it, but
if you want to, when people make a reservation online, you should have that and have them just check the box that I agree to this, and that's what a lot of resorts are doing. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea too.
That may also,
it's an insurance situation, you know, because if somebody rolls a cart, wrecks a cart, what do you do?
Yeah.
It might be also a good spot to put the age of the drivers.
Yeah.
We see too many kids out there driving with their dad sitting there.
Yeah.
That's especially an issue. Going from 12 to 13.
Well, that would be part of that same thing that you agreed to. You know, if you don't have a driver's license, technically you're not supposed to drive a golf cart.
Yeah.
In the state of Utah, you can't drive a golf cart unless you have a driver's license.
Yeah, well, this in Ohio, they made you show your driver's license, sign a release, and they gave you the key.
Yeah.
And
they used to do that.
It only took
too,
about 10 seconds, really.
People got away from it for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like the online.
Yeah.
That would be good.
Yeah, because, I mean, that's like the ski release.
Yeah.
Your ticket is, and even though, you know, you have...
Yeah, your ticket, it has a liability thing.
Correct.
Can we also put the age, minimum age?
Yeah.
On that, and I mean for kids, because
I think you have to have a driver's license.
This is for kids just driving, you know, with their parents in a cart, and all of a sudden we've had this happen a couple of times. We'll have a kid run out of the cart, and all of a sudden, you know, somebody else is hitting, and they don't know that kid is in that neighborhood because they're too short.
Mm-hmm.
And so that worries me too, about 2 or 3 year olds out on a cart on the course.
Is there a minimum age to be on the golf course here?
We don't have one.
You know, Bountiful Ridge has one. You have to be at least 7 years old to even be on the golf course.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I know they've gotten quite a few negative reviews because of that policy, and that's why I haven't really pushed it. Not to say that reviews trump the safety of a kid, but ultimately it's up to the parent.
It's a tough call because, you know, all 7-year-olds aren't created equal either.
No.
Some are responsible and some are completely out of control. And it comes down to parents too, you know. Some parents control their kids and they say, if you are going to ride in the car with me, you stay in the car. You know,
But maybe we can make some disclaimers in there that
a short statement, because, you know, you don't know when the parent takes the cart, the clubs and et cetera, you don't know who's riding in that going back.
Yeah.
The parent is really outspoken and really, you know, my 8-year-old Johnny is a junior golfer. He knows etiquette and he's well behaved. And you can always make an exception to that rule. You can just say, okay, he's okay.
Yeah, I think my preference would be to make a recommendation of here's a recommended policy that we would like, you know, no 3-year-olds and I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll think about that.
Controlling the carts helps that a little bit too, because if there's two golfers, and I mean they can still squeeze the kid in between them, but I see a lot of times, you know, 3 carts out there with a parent and a kid and 2 people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So 4 people, but 3 carts and two kids.
Two paid carts and 2 extra riders.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think last year we did a pretty good job charging people for those. I mean, I know it doesn't look great to have 4 carts and 4 golfers and 4 spectators. I don't like it. I don't even like the foursome. Oh, my girlfriend's coming. Can I get an extra cart? So there's 3 in a group. I don't like it, but if they're paying for it.
I don't mind if they're paying for it.
Yeah.
But if they're not paying for it,
yeah.
And that's the other key.
Mm-hmm. And we did a pretty good job, at least when I was there, seeing us charging for them.
Yeah,
we did
it's,
better.
It's not a significant problem.
I wouldn't
create more problems.
I think the ranches and others do it just because they run out of carts. We've been close here and there. But the majority of that's actually more from singles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have a heavy single day, and they want to take their own cart, and they're playing with a threesome or a twosome or a four, you know.
Yeah.
Or three other singles. You know, we've had that where three singles are all playing in the same group, and they've got three carts. I know that.
Yes. I tell you, most of the places that I play away from here, though, they've got the carts lined up. You know, they've got your name on the cart.
Yeah.
And if you're a single and you're matched with somebody else who you don't know,
yeah.
And you get there, and I mean, it's a little different where it's residential here. You know, when you're on vacation, it's kind of nice to play with somebody else here. Sometimes people don't want to do that, but
yeah.
I mean, that's...
Well, so Ryan, you know, if you remember Ryan Curtis, who was on the golf committee a couple of years ago, him and I talked about this a little bit about how to getting that country club experience, and you know, we've talked about, and this part of the reason why I wanted the two info holders is us printing out cart tags for the first 2-3 hours in the morning,
mm-hmm.
the group, so they have their names on the carts, and you know, we're putting in the cart numbers before they even get there. Say, hey, you're on cart.
Right.
So as we're looking on the tee sheet, you're on cart 51. It's staged out there with your name on it. Have a good round, type,
mm-hmm.
you know, just a little bit of an elevation of
right. That's good.
How we
what
do that. I think with having the on-course attendant and the outside services a little bit more centralized right there where the cart staging is, we can implement that a little better.
Yeah.
Just a lot of training staff and paper. A lot of paper.
So your printer's going to get a good workout.
Yeah.
Well, it takes time to get it all implemented. Once everybody gets used to it,
yeah.
it's routine. It's not as hard to do it anymore.
Well, we've got our amenity cart out there now with free tees and ball marks and divot tools and towels, and hopefully people have a good experience.
Yeah.
That's great. That's the country club touch.
Mm-hmm.
Private club touch. That's great.
So if you think of anything like as your golf courses, or hey, you should try this, or here's an idea, feel free to throw it at me, because I don't get out and play as much as I used to.
Well, I'll ask you, because I didn't notice, do the new carts have a little ice chest on them, and do they have ball washers on them?
Ball washers, club cleaners, and then the sand and seed.
But not a little mm-hmm. ice chest.
A little cooler,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Okay.
Well, that can be easily added to it. The nice thing about that, I play an awful lot of courses that have that, and you pick it up in the cafe,
yeah.
and so you get your
put
beer
your
or your soda or whatever on ice,
yeah.
and you just stick it on your cart.
Or they put, you know, four waters in them.
Yeah.
It's a nice, the resorts usually do that.
Yeah.
There aren't any public courses that do that.
Uh-huh. I mean, the water bottle, especially the Costco ones, are relatively inexpensive.
Right.
Yeah.
Although they're more now.
They are. They did go up. I did see that.
They increased the price by 33% in cases of Costco
yeah.
water. Just like everybody else.
Yeah.
I haven't really talked with Justin about it. I certainly did with George and Tanya on getting some cooler bags with our Eaglewood
mm-hmm.
embroidered on them that we could give out. Because they would always complain that people would bring their own coolers. And no, I said, why don't we just supply them for them, so they kind of get used to, I don't need to bring mine.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Well, have them in the cafe too.
Yeah.
So if they
want
to buy them
here,
you put them with ice and that, and
yeah.
you carry them out. Cause
I know Sky Mountain does that down there. They charge them basically a rental fee, and they give them a voucher or a credit when they return it. So they charge them. Hey, it's charging you a $5 cooler fee. You bring that back, we'll refund your card type deal. But we've talked about that too.
Thing.
Yeah,
that's a good service. I mean,
yeah.
Good service. Customer service.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you have a cart going around often enough, you don't have to do as much of that. But
right.
you know, typically during the week, you don't have a cart that's that frequent. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know some places I play, but time the cart comes around, you're on the ninth hole, you might as well go into the clubhouse, you know. They've missed everybody.
We're going to be pretty heavy on beverage cart girls, especially weekends. We'll have one out from 8 to 8. We'll have some different, you know, two girls throughout the day, early shift and the later shift. And then Monday.
That's great. It'll be interesting to see what the reaction is to that. I think it'll be positive.
Oh, yeah.
People will move by.
I think we'll be busy out there.
Now, can our beverage carts dispense beer?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So the cart girls are 21?
Yep. We'll have, everybody's 21. Most of them have finished their alcohol server training. So
perfect.
10 o'clock, they're going to start selling.
I predict a 500 to 1,000% increase in beer sales.
Yeah.
Here's something I suggest, too, for the cafe. Non-alcoholic beer.
Yeah, we've talked about that, too.
I get some from a company called Athletic Brewing. I mean, they send it to me. And some of them, you would swear you're drinking beer.
Really?
I mean, there's some that have an off taste to them, at least to me.
Yeah.
But I'll bring a couple cans
water.
Up to you.
Yeah.
But it's...
It's beer-flavored water.
Yes. Well, it's...
Nothing wrong with that. I mean, there are some...
It's beer that somehow they take the alcohol out of.
Yeah, well, Anheuser-Busch and everybody brews it, Coors brews it non-alcoholic.
Yeah, I'll tell you, the ones they hit, those are all terrible, in my opinion.
Right.
Okay, from taste
standpoint. Well, I remember, though, I've only had one, to be honest with you, in my life, but a non-alcoholic beer, but it was a name brand.
Yeah, what was the brand?
O'Doul's.
O'Doul's,
yeah.
Popular ones. Yeah, been around for 20 years or so.
Yeah.
But these new ones, I mean... They taste just like, you know, they've got IPAs, they've got amber ales and everything.
Yeah, good craft beers, but there's no alcohol.
Yeah.
You guys will have to, Justin's got some Bewildered Brewing, different IPAs and stuff that you have to try and let me know how you like them. We're working with them to get us a private label one.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have Eaglewood on that will have a special
Eaglewood
blend.
Eaglewood Ale.
Yeah.
I like it. Eaglewood Ale, I like it all. And if you'd like our Eaglewood Pilsner, we've got that.
Yeah, he's into that stuff, so I kind of let him run with that a little bit.
That's cool.
Eaglewood Ale, the liquid that makes you drive further.
That's right.
Not necessarily straighter, but further.
The possibilities, yeah.
Confidence level increases,
right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you think with Wasatch and Squatters and all those polygamy porter and so forth, I mean, you started out with the craziest of stuff. You know, the newer breweries are not off the chart anymore like that.
Well,
but
once they catch on, though, they're big sellers.
Yeah.
Polygamy porters.
All right. Well, do we have anything else for the good of the order? Or?
I think that other than just a reminder on open house on the May 11th for some food.
Okay.
And
what day of the week is that?
Saturday.
I think we're going to be in London or someplace. Like
that. Too bad. I feel bad for you.
think about the esteemed golf committee can be involved in the open house because we're happy to do whatever we need to do. If we need to hand out treats or beverages or show people around.
I think I'd like for sure, I want to do a little ribbon cutting. The mayor probably cut it, but I'd like for everybody in the golf committee and my full-time staff to be part of that picture doing it. So
we're here to help.
Yeah,
that's good.
I'll check with Justin.
Does the city have the giant scissors?
I don't know if we do or not. If not, I'm going to order some or find them or make them.
I'm sure you can rent them somewhere.
Yeah.
The state of Utah has a lot of those that cities can rent or something, you know, because they have to do all those ribbon cuttings.
Yeah, I'm sure someone's got some somewhere.
Hey, I move that we adjourn.
Okay.
I second it.
Thank you very much.
Let's go get some dinner.